Welcome to the Summer of Peace, a free global online event designed to help you find inner peace and to take inspired action. The Summer of Peace is a production of the Shift Network, and this Global Compassion Summit is co-produced with Stanford University's Center for Compassion and Altruism Research and Education, as well as the Charter for Compassion. The Global Compassion Summit highlights the latest science and practices that help us embrace compassion and recognize compassionate action as an important path to peace. We're so grateful that you're here. Please share your questions or insights at www.facebook.com/shiftnetwork. And now, your host for this call, Emily Hine, the director of the Global Compassion Summit.
Welcome back to the Global Compassion Summit. I'm your host, Emily Hine, and I'm so eager to get into the conversation with our guest this hour, Congressman Tim Ryan. Many of you know that Tim Ryan is a relentless advocate for working families in Ohio's 13th District. He was first elected to the U.S. House of Representatives in 2002, and he has been successfully reelected 6 times. Congressman Ryan currently serves as a member of the House Appropriations Committee and the House Budget Committee. He also serves as co-chairman of the Congressional Manufacturing Caucus and remains a leader in the fight to strengthen America's manufacturing base and reform U.S. trade policies. He's a dynamic leader, and I could go on and on about how he has championed efforts to make college more affordable, revitalize America's cities, improve the health and well-being of American families and children. He's really a leader in the conversation around mindfulness. Apropos to that and our conversation today, Tim Ryan is the author of A Mindful Nation, How a Simple Practice Can Help Us Reduce Stress, Improve Performance, and Recapture the American Spirit. He's also the author of The Real Food Revolution, Healthy Eating, Green Groceries, and the Return of the American Family Farm. I am so grateful that you are here with us, Congressman Ryan. Thank you so much for taking time out to be with us during the Global Compassion Summit. Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be with you.
Great. Well, let's dive right in. I know your time is very limited. Our session title today is Compassion and Mindfulness in Politics. And I think many of the people who are part of this whole Compassion Summit recognize that mindfulness and compassion go hand in hand. And mindfulness in particular has been around for a long time. But most recently, there's been this surge in popularity in Western cultures. A recent episode of 60 Minutes with Anderson Cooper, our NFL Seattle Seahawks football team is meditating together. Employees at Google and LinkedIn and Facebook and others are meditating. And you not only wrote a book called Mindful Nation, but you are actively bringing the practice of mindfulness into politics. So with that kind of lead-in, could you start your talk by giving us an overview of how you got into mindfulness and what inspired you to introduce it into Washington, D.C.?
Well, I flirted on and off with all kinds of different meditations throughout my life. I grew up Catholic, and there were a lot of people in my life who prayed the rosary and had a priest teach me centering prayer, which was a Catholic-based meditation. And on and off throughout my life, you know, Deepak Chopra and Wayne Dyer and kind of the whole crew, and learned a lot from them. And did it like most people do it. You know, you do it for a couple days. You practice some form of meditation or something that really makes you feel good. And then I wouldn't do it for 2 or 3 or 4 months and wonder why I didn't. Because I felt better. My level of concentration was higher. I was calmer. Made better decisions for the most part. And then got into politics, you know, ran for Congress and won, and life got, you know, kind of consistently more hectic and more busy. In about 2008, I did a 5-day retreat. I was to the point at about 35 years old where I thought, you know, I'm not burnt out today, but if I keep going at this pace, I will be by the time I'm 40, and I didn't want that. And I knew that if I was going to start a daily mindfulness meditation practice, or even a meditation practice, I needed to do a retreat. I had done day and a half retreats, but I knew if I did an extended retreat, I would develop more of a habit. And so I found a five-day retreat that started 2 days after the 2008 election, and I represent Ohio, which is always in the middle of the presidential elections and made things even busier. So 2 days after that crazy 2008 election, there was a five-day retreat. And I went to that retreat, and Jon Kabat-Zinn, who brought secular mindfulness to the United States and expanded it and really started to study it, had this retreat, and it was just, you know, blew my mind and really calmed me down and really got in touch with the idea of being able to see how your mind was functioning and understand more about what I was thinking about, why I was thinking about it. And immediately, as someone who is in Congress and a policymaker, immediately started to think, wow, why aren't we teaching this to our kids? Why isn't this a part of our healthcare system? Why aren't we using this with veterans who are coming back so traumatized? And all the different benefits that it could probably have for a very low cost if we started implementing this in the current institutions that we had. That led to the book A Mindful Nation, and that led to me being, you know, really motivated to try to bring it to Capitol Hill and bring it to the policies, because, you know, my own personal practice and my work really are in many ways the same thing. So that personal experience really got extended out into the policies that I wanted to push.
Well, so how was it first received when you introduced it to some of your colleagues in Capitol Hill?
Well, we had some very interesting conversations in my staff alone when I, you know, I wanted to write a book about mindfulness meditation. That's not something that, you know, the typical Capitol Hill staff hears from their member of Congress that they work with. And so there were some interesting conversations there. And then, you know, it's, I haven't tried to jam it down anyone's throat. We started a weekly meditation, we call it the Quiet Time Caucus, where you can come in and it's just a half hour of silence, and you can come in and pray the rosary or do mindfulness or transcendental meditation or anything else. You just can't talk is the only rule. And so we're carving out space to do that. And so you can come if you want, you know. And then we have a weekly meditation with staff here on Capitol Hill. And, you know, we normally have, depending on how busy things are, 30 or 40 staff members come. And we had Mathieu Ricard was here last week leading a meditation. So we have different teachers come in, and we let members of the staff see different applications. So whether it's with the military or veterans or education or just a general, you know, meditation practice, and then have teachers kind of do a little brief presentation and then a 10 or 15 or 20 minute guided meditation. So providing it, making it accessible so that people can go and do it if they want to. And it's just slowly catching on, you know. And I wouldn't say, we don't have a whole lot of members of Congress come to our members retreat. We're actually sending out a request now to see if there's a better time to do it. So I'm trying to make it as easy and accessible for members of Congress to come. And the same with the staff. We used to do it during the week when we were here, when the members of Congress were here. We moved it to the days when we're not here, so that they can have time to go and all of us are back home in our districts, wherever we are. And that increased participation. So we're trying to find the sweet spot for members and just provide the space for them to come. But they're hearing about it more and more. So it's on 60 Minutes. If I had a nickel for every member who came up to me and said, hey, my wife read about you in Yoga Journal, or my wife read, or my daughter read about you in at the Wanderlust Festival, or, you know, Summer of Peace. You know, people will listen to this, and somehow it'll get to a member of Congress or their wife or their daughter or their cousin, and they'll ask their member about me, and that's when we slowly try to introduce them and say, hey, if you want to come by, you know, we have this weekly routine. So it's catching on slowly but surely.
I think it's fantastic that you have been a pace setter in this and that you're holding it with such an open hand and making it invitational for people. It seems to be a beautiful way to invite people in. And do you think that doing these mindfulness practices and offering this is helping your colleagues become, and you, more compassionate in the political realm?
I know it's helped me. I can't speak to anyone else. Like I said, we're not getting the kind of response I hope, but then I kind of tried to let go of that and just say, hey, I'm going to provide the space. But it's helped me a great deal, not to be as judgmental, not to be so quick to get in a fight with somebody and spend more time maybe listening and understanding and trying to understand where they're coming from and listening enough to maybe try to find some common ground that we could both have and get to and maybe even push a piece of legislation or an idea that we agree on. So it's been very helpful for me, and it gets, you know, like anything you do, it gets better all the time. You know, I think I get less judgmental all the time. I think I get less reactive all the time. And we can get in some heated moments, and I'm not always putting my best foot forward, but I will say that more often than not, I've been able to keep my cool and pay attention and listen and try to be understanding of where this other person is coming from.
Well, I think that's where one of the elements of compassion is common humanity, and what you've just described is exactly that. It's really recognizing that, you know, just like you, members of the opposing party, you know, have a position worth hearing, and I just really kind of want to recognize how difficult that can be given the heat of the things that you're debating. So thank you for serving as a role model for that in politics. I also grew up in a political family, so I kind of know what that takes and a lot of mindfulness training. Let's shift gears just a little bit from politics and Capitol Hill to how you've seen mindfulness practices help specific populations such as veterans and students. I know these are both topics that are near and dear to your heart.
Well, you know, they've both been amazing. You know, I joke with people, you know, you get into Washington and we have these very complex problems, and we think that if we come up with a more complicated, more complex solution, that will fix the very complicated, complex problem. And the reality of it is we've just got to get back to the fundamentals. And I see, you know, mindfulness and attention practices and awareness practices and self-regulation practices as really us getting back to the fundamentals. And to see it happen in schools that can become very chaotic, and I have, and, you know, even in my own congressional district, and to see these social and emotional learning programs with the kind of regulation practices of mindfulness or body awareness or those kind of things change the kids, change the teachers, really, really help them tap into their own ability to regulate themselves and to respond and not react to what's happening, and the teachers start to embody the practice and then model it for the kids. It's a very powerful thing, and I'll give you an example in a school in Warren, Ohio, which is, you know, just north of Youngstown, Ohio, just east of Akron and south of Cleveland, industrial town, you know, probably 100% Medicaid, 100% free and reduced lunch, multicultural district, tough economic times. We implemented this social and emotional learning program about 5 years ago, the Inner Resiliency Program that Linda Lantieri runs. And in the one school that I visited a couple weeks ago, in the McGuffey School, they have had a 60% reduction in out-of-school suspensions. Mm-hmm. And that is, they're 5 years in. It's starting to really take hold. They've shifted the culture of the school. It's not just the SEL. They have a student support center where kids can go. And I think this is a very interesting point. They have a student support center where kids can go, or the teacher says, you need to go to the student support center. And they'll have other students down there that are older students that have been taught mediation. So these kids will help mediate a problem between a couple of kids, or there'll be a counselor down there that can help some kid that's going through something. But the interesting part is 50% of the kids that go to the student support center were self-referrals, meaning they have cultivated enough awareness to know when they're going to act out when they're going to do something they wish they wouldn't do. And they raise their hand and they tell their teachers, I need to get out of here. I'm going to punch somebody in the face or I'm going to, you know, whatever. And they leave. And they go down to the student support center. 50% of them are self-referrals. That's the kind of education I think we need, the knowing of thyself, the understanding of your own emotional state, and then the techniques to be able to then regulate. And we're seeing the studies come out now of how important self-regulation is to social success, economic success, family success, success in your relationships. Self-regulation is a huge component of that, and so we need to start teaching it in the schools, and those are the kind of things that happen. And I think the next step is you start seeing the test scores improve, because then you can identify your fears and your anger, and you can then regulate it and then get back onto task. That builds resiliency, which is another key quality. So in the field of education, I think this is really transformational, and I think social emotional learning and attention awareness practices are the common core. You know, we're having a big discussion about common core in America right now. That's the common core. Awareness cultivation, high levels of attention practices, being able to, you know, teach a kid how to pay attention instead of just yell at them to pay attention, and then how to regulate and deal with your emotions and how to deal with that in a social setting with other kids, teachers, adults, community members. That's how you change your schools. That's how you improve your test scores. And that's how you change your neighborhoods, because you've got a bunch of kids that live in the neighborhood that can now regulate and de-escalate situations that could lead to violence in the neighborhoods. And that has an impact on your safety forces. That has an impact on what your community is like. So it's huge in the field of education. And then with the vets, you see what happens, you know, and I've meditated with, you know, Vietnam vets at the DCVA here, where they have a patient-centered care program, and they have a mindfulness-based stress reduction program there. And I meditated with them there, about 12 or 15 vets, most of them Vietnam, and they were more bigger advocates for this than I am because of what it did for them. Some of them 40 years, they've been on medication, they're finally getting off it. Haven't slept through the night, now they're saying they're sleeping through the night for the first time in 30 or 40 years. And there are other great programs, Project Welcome Home Troops, which does a Kriya Yoga program approach with a lot of deep breathing and different breathing techniques and meditation. Same thing. Guys going in, women going in, 12, 13 different medications that they're on, going down to one or two, not sleeping through the night, very, you know, hyper-vigilant, all kinds of anxiety issues, sleeping through the night for the first time in years. I'm seeing this transform our vets. And so we're spending all this money on medication at the VA, and we're putting these kids, most of them kids, on these pills, and then lots of pills, when we have these techniques that if we would just open up our eyes, these techniques are changing them. And I'm not saying they can get off all their medication, but if you take them from 12 to 2 or 12 to 3 or 1, that's a huge savings for our government, and you're giving these people their life back. So it's happening in these key areas that really can help us transform our country. You think of these vets that can come back in to become teachers and nurses and cops and firefighters and, you know, part of our civil workforce. Huge. You're giving them their life back. And so I've seen this in a very powerful way transform schools and classrooms and veterans' families. And I think it's important that we stay on it and keep promoting it the best we can.
Wow, you've just said a whole lot of phenomenal things, and I want to just loop back very quickly so we make sure we get the names of some of these programs. First, when we were talking about the schools, you mentioned Linda Lantieri's program. Is that the Inner Resilience program? Is that the official title of that program?
Yeah, Inner Resilience, yeah.
Okay, great. And then for the vets, you mentioned MBSR, which for those of you who are listening is Mindfulness-Based Stress Reduction, and that's the program that Jon Kabat-Zinn originated, and you mentioned his name earlier. And then you also mentioned Project Welcome Home, and is that a national program, Project Welcome Home?
Yeah, Project Welcome Home Troops. It's a national program. John Osborne runs it, and we're cranking it up in Ohio. We had the largest franchisee for Panera Bread, Sam Cavelli, who owns over 200 or 300 Panera Breads around the country, raised money for this program to happen in Ohio. And so they're doing, I think, 7 or 8 different cities in Ohio. And we went to one in Columbus, and they're doing another one in Columbus now. They're doing one in Cincinnati and Youngstown. They're really going to spread it around. It's a phenomenal program. It's the response, you know, if you Google these things and you read the responses coming from, you know, the soldiers, it's the most, you know, inspirational, poignant statement is, this has given me my life back, you know, yeah. And just, you know, just so touching to think, you know, we're saving lives. I mean, that at the end of the day is what's happening, because when you have 22 suicides a day with our veterans, you know, the more you can get to these men and women, whether it's military sexual trauma or post-traumatic stress, you know, the quicker we can get to them, the more lives we're going to save, and the more we're going to, you know, bend that number down from 22 and hopefully get it to 0 at some point. But then you're also returning these people back that are very talented, very disciplined, you know, very structured, and can contribute a lot to our society. You get them back in the game. So they go from being dependent on 12 medications and not doing so well to taking all the skills, training, and talent that they have and really being able to do what they naturally want to do and what drives them, and that's to be of service to the rest of the country and the people of the country. So you're getting a twofer of what you're not losing to what you're getting, and it's a beautiful thing to watch.
It really is. It beautifully illustrates a phrase I think I've heard in 12-step programs, where the person goes from hurting to healing to helping, and that's exactly what these programs do, is take somebody through that trajectory in such a way that they can be in service. So from hurting to healing to helping. Okay, so we've got about maybe 10 more minutes with you, and it seems like the best use of time then is to expand on what you've already spoken about and talk about how can we grow this movement to reach even more people. And I'll start with what I know to be true about campaigns and movements, which is that the most successful movements have both the grassroots elements as well as the endorsements of major leaders. So who besides you and Capitol Hill is supporting this kind of mindfulness movement, especially as we see such phenomenal evidence of its effect for kids and veterans and other populations? Who besides you is leading?
Well, we have Steve Israel, who's a congressman from New York, has taken an interest in it in the last few months. Him and I hosted Deepak Chopra, who came to Capitol Hill and did one of those mindfulness sessions or meditation sessions with the staff. We're also doing some work with mindfulness-based therapies and Alzheimer's. He's a big advocate of trying to do increase research for Alzheimer's, and we've partnered on sending a letter to the Center for Medicare and Medicaid to help promote and continue to research mindfulness with benefiting Alzheimer's patients. So he's been terrific. Tony Cardenas, who practices transcendental meditation, he's from Los Angeles. Him and his wife, Norma, have been very active with the staff sessions, and he's been active in trying to help out with some of these initiatives as well. So those are just off the top of my head, a couple, you know, folks that are very active. And Jared Paulus from Boulder, Colorado, is a great young guy who's very much tied into this. Kristen Sinema from Arizona is also someone that does and has done retreats on her own. And so, you know, we're just slowly moving in this direction, but it's step by step, and it takes a while to build the movement out. But I'll say that I think it's most important that people recognize that the movement starts where they are. You know, if you're a teacher bring it to your classroom. If you're, you know, helping or you want to help military families, you know, which is another key component, or if you're a nurse and you want to bring it to the workforce development, you know, wherever you are, that's where you have to start it. And, you know, if you want to get it in your kid's school, you know, maybe start, you know, with one teacher or one school or one classroom or whatever the case may be, or, and this is a good point we probably should make before we finish up, you've got to recognize that the political system in the United States is important. You know, it's an honor to be a citizen of the United States where you can actively push legislation and policies in one direction or another. And so, you know, find somebody who's into this and run them for school board and get them on your local school board so that they can use their power and authority to push it further in the schools. Or run, you know, get somebody to run for state representative. Or they're doing mindful cities now. There's a great foundation called the Mindful Nation Foundation, which Krishna Pendiala runs. And it's a phenomenal foundation that's helping Wichita develop a mindful city, to be one of the first mindful cities. It's called Wichita in Mind. So wherever you are, is my point, is there's an opportunity for you to help build this broader movement, and eventually we'll connect it all together.
Okay. And so is Mindful Nation Foundation also partnering with the Charter for Compassion, which is putting together compassionate cities all over the world? There are over 200 compassionate cities that have signed the Charter for Compassion and very dedicated. Have you partnered those two together yet?
You know what? I'm glad you said that. I haven't, so I'll make sure I send Krishna a text and try to get him connected with Compassionate Cities, because it's a natural fit.
It is. In fact, we're interviewing Karen Armstrong, who is the head of the Charter for Compassion, and I know she's going to talk about Pakistan as a compassionate city. So we've got, you know, just a ton of organizations around the world who are committed to this, and mindfulness and compassion are really beautiful bedfellows in this whole effort to create a more mindful nation where we are aware of not only the suffering of others, but there are strategies to relieve that suffering. Whether it's through MBSR or Project Welcome Home Troops or the schools programs, there are so many derivatives of this that are successful. So
yeah.
let me ask you this: as we look at this movement, can you see other gaps that are just obvious that we could collectively fill? We have a lot of people interested in following this Compassion Summit and the Summer of Peace who might have some great ways to fill those gaps. What else are you seeing that we collectively could work on?
Well, that's a good question. I can't think of anything off the top of my head, you know, because I think the seeds are planted everywhere. It's just really about watering them. You know, I hear so much that's going on, you know, but with a country of 313 million people or 7 billion people in the world, you know, it's not enough. But I think the seeds are there, and I think, you know, part of, you know, what I think we need to do is, maybe this would be the gap, is connect people who are doing the work. I'm still astonished to this day to meet people who are in a lane on, say, mindfulness in schools or something like that, and they just kind of discover mindfulness on their own or some practice on their own, and then they start bringing it to their classroom, and they have no idea that there are thousands of other people in the country that are doing the same thing, that there's a curriculum for Mind Up, which is Goldie Hawn's program, or that there's Linda Lantieri's program. They have no idea. They're just out on their own doing it. And so I think, you know, we need to maybe figure out how to do a better job of really getting out best practices, because, you know, this isn't some edict that's going to come down, you know, if Tim Ryan was president of the United States, that, okay, mindfulness is in every school. Every community is different, and every community is going to have their own twist on it. And every community, I mean, there maybe needs to be some standards of, you know, we need awareness practices, we need attention practices, but ultimately local school districts, and they should, come up with their own way. But there should be some ideas bank or a place to go, a website or whatever the case, or a foundation that can just spread and say, okay, you're looking for an education program. Here's the portfolio, and maybe we can have certain standards that, you know, we can get UCLA and Miami of Florida and University of Massachusetts and the Center for Mindfulness can set certain standards. And I know Center for Mindfulness at UMass is starting to compile and try to outline what the standards should be for an adequate program that really meets, say, the MBSR standard, which is really the gold standard in mindfulness practices. So these programs for schools have been approved by, you know, the best and brightest in the country who are researching mindfulness and have the content. These are the ones that work. So the average teacher in Youngstown, Ohio can get on that website and go access it. And the same for vets, and the same for healthcare, for stress reduction, and all the rest. Something like that, I think, maybe would help connect this movement a lot better and allow people to engage it at a quicker pace rather than kind of stumble around in the dark for years before they eventually do find that there's a Wisdom 2.0 conference or Wanderlust festivals or places where they could go and actually meet these people and learn from them.
Well, and I think you're right about that, some centralized ideas bank. I actually had no idea that there were as many mindfulness and compassion protocols as there were since I started getting involved with the Stanford C-Care program, which I'm sure you know about.
Oh, yeah.
And their CCT, Compassion Cultivation Training Protocol, and then Kristen Neff and Christopher Germer's work on mindful self-compassion. And there's another program, Cognitive-Based Compassion Therapy out of Emory, and then Paul Gilbert's work on compassion-focused therapy. These are all mindfulness programs that add the element of compassion and loving kindness, which can really be a soothing balm for populations like veterans that are really suffering, and individuals who have been dealing with, you know, decades of depression or anxiety. And so MBSR, alongside all of these others, are really beautiful, measured, researched programs that show effectiveness. And sometimes our Western minds need that proof, and we have it now, as you said, with the Center for Mindfulness and others doing such great work.
Yeah.
Well, this has been a very helpful conversation, and if we can do anything here to support your work any further, to connect all these dots, we would be happy to. I just want to ask you, you know, quickly, is there anything else that you'd like to share with those who are listening during this Compassion Summit? Anything, any words of wisdom that might be kind of your parting words to our audience today?
Well, I would say get involved and, you know, and look me up and try to get connected with me. And because what we're trying to do is really build the national movement and try to, at least from the policy side, get people connected so that they know that, okay, Tim Ryan is pushing for these type of practices in the VA. He's trying to push them in the schools, and here's a piece of legislation that he has. And if people can get connected with me, then we can have petitions where we can, you know, say, okay, we got 50,000 signatures for, you know, Tim Ryan's social and emotional learning bill. And, you know, I'm just using my name because I'm the one here doing it, you know. Mm-hmm. But how do we get enough people to say we're supporting this piece of legislation? And then when we get, if we get further organized, who knows? I mean, for example, not to get too much into the weeds, but the chair of the committee that will handle this bill or do hearings on this bill that can potentially move it on for a vote on the House floor and eventually become a law, maybe that person is from an area of the country that has 1,000 people in the district that are meditators, yogis, functional medicine people, integrative health doctors and nurses and healthcare professionals, nutritionists, you know, chiropractors, whatever. There may be 1,000 of those people in this person's congressional district that if we were organized enough, they could say and write direct letters to that person saying, we want you to take this bill up and have a hearing on it, and we're 1,000 people in your congressional district that vote for you or not vote for you based on whether or not you're pushing the ideas that we want you to push, and maybe can move the lever on some of this stuff and really in a grassroots way be able to do it. So that's why I say, get a hold of me so we can help, you know, connect with my website and all the rest so that we can, you know, just Google Tim Ryan and, you know, log in and let us know so that we can connect everybody to push people to move the policy side. And I'll just say this, this is not a Democrat or Republican thing. If you're interested in saving money, having new solutions, new ideas with things that are actually worked based on the latest brain science and data that we have, then this is the way to go. And it's both compassionate and community-oriented, but it's also about resiliency and self-reliance and individual responsibility. It crosses through all the normal political rhetoric today. And we need help for people to help push this for us. And that's, we're spending so much money on education and healthcare, on vets. Let's spend it in a way that's going to transform these systems so we don't have to go back to the taxpayer and ask for more money, or we're not wasting precious taxpayer dollars on programs that aren't working. I think we have programs that can work, can transform individuals, reduce our costs, and transform our country. And I would say, lastly, get connected with us and help us do it and be a part of it, and don't say, you know, I'm not getting involved with what's going on in Washington. I tease a lot of my friends who are yogis and meditators, and they meditate and want to become one with the world, but they won't vote. You know, That's not being one with the world. That's being separated from what's really going on in the world. And just because you don't like it and it looks a little messy and it's dark, doesn't mean you can't engage it. You have to. We need you. We need people that are into this. Into these ideas, into this concept, and these are the people we need most involved in the political process to help tamp down the volatility and, you know, tamp down the rhetoric and realize we're not going to agree on everything. What can we move forward on? Here's some new ideas. Maybe these ideas can bridge the gap. Let's join hands and try to push them. And as I said, there are all these benefits that kind of cross the political spectrum. So I would say, let's jump in, let's have some fun, get involved, and, you know, let's make a difference.
Fabulous. We have our marching orders. Congressman Ryan, thank you so much for using some of your time and your energy to bring a lot more mindfulness and compassion into politics, and especially for all that you do to serve families, students, and veterans of war. It's not easy to be a pace setter in this, and yet you are doing it, and it actually is creating some traction towards a more mindful nation. So thank you so much for what you do and for being with us today.
Appreciate that. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And for those of you who would like more information about Congressman Ryan's work, please visit timryan.house.gov. And the title of the book that we mentioned earlier, A Mindful Nation, is a great read. Thank you all for joining us for this inspiring talk with Congressman Tim Ryan. And perhaps it sparked an idea that you can use to bring more mindfulness and compassion into your home, your place of business, or your school. Please join us for the next session of the Global Compassion Summit. We'll continue this conversation. Take care, everybody.
Thank you for joining us for the Summer of Peace, brought to you by the Shift Network. For more information about joining our global community dedicated to helping people awaken to their divine humanity and take inspired action, visit theshiftnetwork.com. To learn more about the Summer of Peace and the World Peace Library, visit summerofpeace.net. Thank you for sharing this summit with your friends and family. We appreciate your dedicated support.